the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you today. First off, I have an announcement. Many of you heard about our Boundless Show podcast survey, the Boundless Show survey. We are in the middle of it right now. We have had over 300 of you take it already. We're very excited about that. But if you are listening and you have not yet taken it, what is going on? Okay, you're listening to the show. You need to tell us what you think about the show. Okay, we need a good sampling of feedback. So we're going to go into a final week here of the survey being open. So we need you to go to the blog, to our site, and look up the link for the Boundless Show survey and take the survey. If you do take it, you will get a free download of an interview with Tim and Kathy Keller on their book, The Meaning of Marriage. I know there are a lot of Keller fans out there, so you guys will be excited about that. But this survey will only take you like 5 minutes of your time, and it asks you just questions that allow you to say all kinds of crazy stuff, basically. Some of them are easy. You're just going to be clicking a little bubble. And some of them, we want you to actually write something substantive. But this is your show. And if you want it to improve, we definitely need to hear from you. So do it, people. Do it. That is Lisa A talking to you right now. Do it. Okay, now on to the show. It is our Father's Day show. Very excited about this. We have got a great group of people for our roundtable. Later on in the show, we're going to hear from one of our counselors, Glenn Lutyens, and he's going to be talking about the whole concept of manhood and the nice guy phenomenon, a guy who's kind of frustrated with that. For our culture segment, I have interviewed Byron Yon. He is the author of What Every Man Wishes His Father Had Told Him. And it's really a great interview, obviously in line with a lot of stuff that we talk about here at Boundless, but he's got some good practical tips for you guys as far as getting community and really moving into that next phase of life and getting you where you want to be. But here we are for our roundtable. I've got a good group of folks, and we are talking about Father's Day and really the whole idea of missing dad. Everyone here on the panel has lost their fathers to death. And so we thought it would be a good opportunity, a good angle on this topic to really honor our dads and talk about some of the uniquenesses of what it means to navigate life now without a dad and just the things that we've learned, any regrets that we have. So the first thing I want to ask you guys, and I've got Mike Hall-Smith. Hey, Mike, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Lisa.
Great to have you. It's been a while.
It has. I'm now married.
I know.
And coming up.
That's
to
why
a
we
year
didn't have
half.
You on for a while because yeah. We had to see, you know,
ignore
you had a
me.
Kind of a waiting period there.
Yeah,
yeah, it was good. Patrick Dunn is back in the house. Good to have you, Patrick.
Greetings.
And Julie is actually Martha's friend. We love it when Martha brings her friends. Martha has friends outside of focus, people. That's good.
It's true.
We appreciate it. She did. So Julie is here. Welcome.
Thank
Julie
you.
Julie and myself. We round out the two women on the panel. The first question that I want to ask y'all is losing your dad. I want to start with kind of that starkest memory of when you realized, when it became real that your dad was no longer here and what that meant to you personally. Mm. Who wants to jump in?
Well, if you're talking about dad died, I mean, I was actually there at, you know, the typical, like, we were at the bedside type of thing, and he had his last breath. So it was pretty obvious that, you know, dad's gone.
Hmm. Yeah. For me, I was 13, and my dad had been sick for 5 years. So it wasn't that it was out of the ordinary that he would be in the hospital and that sort of thing. But I do remember that it started getting worse and worse. And we had a family friend that was staying with me at the time, and she wouldn't give me any sort of news. And finally, that night, I tried to go to sleep because I was trying to be a responsible teenager and get in bed before I needed to get up early the next morning, and couldn't sleep at all. Just felt a restlessness in my spirit. And then my mom came in and said, "Your dad passed away, and it's just us now," me being an only child. And so I just remember that moment of just shock, and then just feeling very ill, and then saying, you know what, we're going to trust in the Lord anyway. Mm-hmm. And that was a big emotional thing. But, you know, even just not being, feeling like it didn't hit for maybe weeks after.
Wow.
Yeah, and for me, it was my dad passed away about 10 years ago. And I remember, he battled cancer for 3 years. And like the last couple months of his life, I was away at school in northern Wisconsin. And I remember getting a call. I was in class at the time, and I got a call from my mom, And I think as soon as I heard that, hey, your mom's calling, I think it was one of those, like, the reality just set in. I knew exactly what, like, Julie, you were talking about, that heaviness of the spirit. I knew what was about to be told to me, so.
Yeah. I had a similar situation in that it was the middle of the night, early morning, actually. My dad had died in the middle of the night in his sleep. He, too, had cancer. And I got the call and just knew. And it was almost a relief at that point because I'd seen my dad 2 or 3 weeks prior, and I just knew that he was in pain and that he was really letting go at that point. But for me, the realization where it really struck home was that Christmas when I was shopping. I was in the mall, and I remember stopping and saying, oh, my word, I haven't gotten anything for Dad yet. I was kind of going through my mental Christmas list and realizing I don't need to get anything for him for Christmas because he's gone. And I just remember that being very kind of a stark and startling moment for me. Yeah. How practically do you guys miss him now? I mean, Mike, you said it's even 10 years later. I mean, I think a lot of people, we say, you know, time can kind of start fading some of the hurt, some of the memories, but there's still things that trigger, wow, I really miss him.
Yeah, actually, I was just telling Lex, my wife, yesterday that we had this moment. We were talking about family and one day wanting to have children, and it was just the reality just hit me like a ton of bricks again. And yeah, it's been 10 years, and just broke down in tears, and just that longing. Every new stage of life, I have longed for Dad to be there. I've longed for Dad to see me graduate college and, you know, get engaged and get married, and now wanting him to eventually be there for kids, and then, you know, wanting the other big stages of life. And I had a mentor actually back when Dad passed away. I think it was actually a month before Dad passed away. I was talking to this mentor, and his dad had passed away 10 years before that. And I remember asking him, I'm like, you know, does it get any better? And he's like, to be honest, Mike, 10 years now has gone by, and I still find myself standing in the kitchen doing the dishes, and it'll be the most random memory that hits me, and I'll break down in tears. And so now that it's been 10 years for me, I'm like, he is exactly right. At every stage, it will come at the most, seems like the most inopportune moment, but I think the Holy Spirit is maybe encouraging me through that, building me up, reminding me of the good times, and causing me to long for heaven.
I had to come to the realization this year that I had lived half my life without my father and half with being 13 and 13. I'm now 26, and just realizing that God has been so faithful in providing mentors in my life that are men, but yet they're still not my father, you know, and having that consistency for maybe a year or two is fantastic. So when I was in college, I had a couple mentors who were men, older gentlemen who would love me like a daughter, but then I would have to move on. And so recognizing again, going back to the Lord over and over saying, you're consistent for me, even when, you know, earthly men can't, but also recognizing that there is a provision made for us that we can ask others to be kind of come alongside. So even I was looking for a car this past week and trying to go and do that whole thing by myself and say, okay, I don't know anything about cars, but I need to try to look like I do. And I finally was talking to the car gentleman, and he's explaining to me. And I said, well, I may have to have my second father come and look at these, you know, before I can make a decision. And he said, what does that mean? And I said, well, my father passed away, but I have another gentleman here in town who has taken up that you know, opportunity to kind of father me along.
Yeah, even it just makes me realize as you're saying that your dad hasn't known you as an adult. You know, so there's kind of, like you said, I mean, the whole idea of, yeah, of car shopping and all those responsibilities that he would have had input on and stuff, and as you've taken on additional responsibility.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a powerful testament to the role that a dad does play, because, you know, I had one of those stories where my parents divorced when I was young, and my dad moved across country, so the majority of my life, he was absent, and he was an alcoholic, and so he was absent in a number of ways, and we really had to kind of pursue fragments of a relationship with him until just right before he died. But despite that, I mean, I could look back and go, I really kind of almost didn't have a dad. Even going through life potentially opposite of the positive memories that that everyone else might have with their dad, I didn't really have those, but I would still say even now, I still think about him. You know, I still oh, it'd be cool to call Dad today. I mean, it shows that even if you had a weak or almost a non-existent or even a dysfunctional relationship, that's a role that you that still carries a lot of weight and a lot of influence. And I find even now on a pretty consistent basis, you know, just a little thought here and there will pop in, or I'll be doing something and it'd be great to talk to him right now. And of course, now I have a small child, another baby on the way, and it's the same thing. It's like, well, they're not going to have a grandpa, you know. And so you never really kind of let go of those things.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit, Patrick, about, because I think this is fascinating, how you were telling me yesterday, really all the memories, negative memories that you had with your dad, and just the, you know, when you would go and visit, kind of what would happen and how you constantly relive that. But he came to know Christ, there was a transformation, and you were able to see a different side of him. How do you reconcile kind of those two sides now as you look upon that memory?
Well, and I'm just grateful that we had those memories. You know, again, with a divorce, you're a fractured family. But then the fact that he had moved away, and he, you know, he was an alcoholic up until a couple of years before he died, and so, you know, we didn't talk too much. He was very apathetic about the fact that he had kids, and I had to kind of go through this process of, all right, I need to stop the whole, I've been cheated by life, I never really had a dad, and I need to realize that my job is to do my part and try to be the best son I can, regardless of the kind of father he's going to be. And so we just kind of kept in touch and pursued and visited and things like that. But then, yeah, he almost died, and he didn't. And out of that, he just kind of like, wow, I need to change who I am. And he literally, he stopped drinking, he started going back to church, he gave his life to the Lord, and suddenly me and my three other brothers, it's kind of like, I never knew this guy existed. And we had some of the greatest times when we would visit him, and he actually came down and visited us, which was a, you know, like a parting of the Red Sea type of a thing. And we saw, wow, I'm just like that, and he's really funny, and look at how he does it. And we just saw all this stuff blossom that was just under this shroud of, you know, he was never sober, and all the other, you know, things that can go along with that. So it was fascinating, and it was short, but it was such a great, you know, it was great to be able to hold on to finally kind of knowing who he really was, and seeing some of the places that we could relate more to him. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice way to kind of wrap things up.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How do you all, especially now that we're, you know, in the Father's Day weekend, how do you guys honor your dads, even though they're gone?
I mean, I used to honor my mom. I would give her a card or a gift and say, you know, I know that you're doing double duty right now, especially with a teenager, you know, so thanks for that. I would honor her in that way. And then even just on a daily basis, trying to remember the things that he taught me. Both my parents and my grandmother were social workers for the Department of Human Services, and he was the county director. And so for his heart, for people, were very much, Julie, get up. Like, I know you're an only child, but get up and serve somebody, because life is not about you. Mm-hmm. And I've seen just the way that he served people, the way he was so compassionate and wanted to make sure that they had basic needs as well as spiritual health, mental health, and all of that, making sure that I bring that into my daily life, and that echoes off of his legacy, you mm-hmm. know, through me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Julie, I think what you're talking about honoring your father's legacy by maybe exemplifying that selflessness and serving others. I mean, yeah, I can't think of specific things that I do, like, you know, to honor Dad on this day, this one I'm going to say or do, but my desire being all those things that Dad taught me, I want to pass on to children one day. I want to honor my mom just as my dad honored her. And, you know, then there's the other opportunities with other dads that you know to say Happy Father's Day or thank them for maybe the role that they've had in your life. Because in those 10 years, I had, I don't know, probably 10 different mentors that specifically poured into my life. And whether they knew Dad was gone or not, I think they saw an opportunity to strengthen a young man, to encourage him, to teach him. And, Yeah, I think to continue on that legacy and to do that for other young men who don't have a father, I think that would be honoring of Dad. Mm-hmm. And I, just kind of a side note, I think the loss of a father, Patrick, it goes kind of back to what you're saying, the loss of the father is difficult no matter what your age. If you are older and you've had 50 years with your dad, it's still difficult to lose your dad because you think of all the memories that you've had. And then if you lose your father when you're 19, as I did, you look forward at all the memories that you could have had. And so just the fact that it hurts when you lose a dad, I think is, there's no way around that. Mm-hmm. And it's evidence that we all carry a father wound.
Mm-hmm. My initial, reflex action, if it's like, well, tell me about your dad. I mean, it's usually the person that's, well, he wasn't really much of a dad. I mean, it's not the honor dad thing. Mm-hmm. It's the, mm-hmm. here's the things he wasn't and the things that we wished he was. And you know what I mean? Because there were years of that kind of thing. And so, mm-hmm. There's still enough of that you have to like, wait a second, no. And then you can go, well, he was, and then kind of have the list of, well, here's the things that I'm going to tell my kids about. You know, here's what grandpa was like, and here's the funny things about him. And, you know, we have funny stories and things like that. But it's mm-hmm. it's an entirely different approach almost than, what they're all saying of, well, everything my dad taught me. You know, there's parts of me that would still go, well, my dad didn't teach me anything, mm-hmm. And then you have to like, wait a second here, we're past all that. Mm-hmm. So,
But that's so legit. And it's interesting because I want everyone to go to our site right now and look at the article that's up. This week's article is by Joshua Rogers. A lot of you love him. He tells it like it is. And it's called The Thrill of Dishonoring My Father. It's the first part of two. And it's really his story, a lot of similarities to Patrick about all the wrongs that his father did against him and how he had stacked them up and would use them. You know, he was waiting for this apology from his father, waiting for this acknowledgement and didn't get it. And what he had to do in response. I think it's interesting because I have a similar story with my dad and feeling like now 10 years later, I can definitely put on the rose-colored glasses and look back mm-hmm. and be like, my dad was this spiritual giant. My dad was an evangelist and I'm not. My personality is much more like my mom's, for good or for bad. for those of you that know my mom, bless her heart. Hey, mom. But anyway, my dad was just the quiet servant type, loved mm-hmm. people, loved sharing the gospel. And, it's neat to think how, but at the same time, I've jokingly said, maybe not always the best parenting tactics sometimes, maybe not, he had his failures too, and did not read any of Dr. Dobson's books, I do not think. But anyway, he stumbled through and had six kids and just made it work. But I just always think of that passion for evangelism. And it's neat now because we just found out actually that Boundless, and again, shout out to y'all and to our authors and everyone who contributes to Boundless. Boundless is now someone who engages with Boundless is 2.8 times more likely to make a decision for Christ
awesome.
Than someone who does not. And that's actually the highest trending outreach or ministry at Focus to get. We're at the top of the heap for that. So we may think that we're just talking about marriage and careers and everything here, but ultimately we want to talk about the Lord and about glorifying him. Great example in Patrick's dad, 2 years before he dies, recognizes that the life he's lived just was not where he wanted to be, and God pulled him out of that. So pretty amazing stuff. Just before we go here, I want you guys to weigh in on what advice do you have for those out there who have dads? I mean, now we're, there's nothing else that we can do. We can't sit down and have a conversation with our dads anymore. We can't bless them in that sense. We can't help them. We can't learn anything, from them face to face anymore. What would you challenge those out there with who have their dads available to them?
Well, I can speak, for those that have the, the relationship with my dad isn't so good story, having lived through that, I think, number one, you can repeat those cycles or you can learn to go, those are things that hurt me or I didn't appreciate. And whenever I'm a dad, I'm not going to be that guy. I really want to figure it out. And not in the hateful, like, I'm never being like my dad. There's people, that's a different motive. But it's looking at the things that you know should have been, and making a commitment to be that dad. And so you're not the next cycle of the dad that didn't care. I think that's important. And I think, again, a pivotal moment for me was to realize this isn't about, it's almost like a marriage. If you spend the whole time looking at the things your spouse isn't doing, you know, it's really about what are you doing? And so for me, a pivotal thing was, this isn't about what kind of a dad he's been. This is about what kind of a son I need to be, and who's God called me to be in this relationship. And that I think no matter where you're at is important, because there's a lot of healing. It does a lot for you, whether they respond or not. And I think that, you know, at some point when your dad passes away, it sure means a lot to go, you know, I did what I could to make it the best, versus like, I wrote him off years ago. You know what I mean? It's a completely different thing. And that, I think that's important.
To have no regrets in that is very freeing.
Yeah.
I think encouragement for that young man or that young lady. I think it's easy in the mid-20s to feel like you're figuring life out, or you've got it figured out, or, you know, this is my life and I'm charging forward. And what I wish I had the opportunity to do in the midst of those mid-20s was to just sit and listen to Dad and to learn from him. And yeah, he was not perfect. He made mistakes, just like any human being. But to sit and listen, to learn, and then to show my appreciation. But that is difficult at that age. I mean, you have to keep your mouth shut, and you have to acknowledge that there are those that know more than you do. So take the opportunity to listen, learn, and then show appreciation by loving and even honoring your dad. Don't wait till he dies to honor him. Honor him while he's alive, even if he doesn't deserve the honor. I mean, every father has worked hard.
Yeah. I think just even echoing off of that is just, yeah, making sure that you're taking that time and really enjoying it and embracing it and seeing it as it is. I remember, again, right before my dad passed away, he got super excited, which was out of the ordinary with all the medication and all that going on. And he said, "Julie, there's a Disney movie you love on." And I thought, "Dad, it's been like 6 years since I've even seen that thing, you know?" But I remember just feeling like I needed to honor him in that. And so, you know, I cuddled up next to him on the sofa and just thought, he's being, you know, he feels so delighted in the fact that I'm spending time with him right now versus, you know, whatever I could have been doing at 13, reading or something. And just recognizing this is a really precious time I have. And so now, you know, I had two friends that lost their dad yesterday, actually, and thinking, you know, they're my age now, but I know that they would embrace one more day with their dad, one more moment to really spend that quality time together. So for those who still have that day, to take it and make it really good.
That's cool. I'm studying Deuteronomy right now and just have been impressed. The Israelites are finally getting to go into the promised land, praise God, after Leviticus and Numbers. It's been a long, long journey, trust me. But just recognizing how, as God calls out the leaders of the clans and how those 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, really what the men in those clans were responsible for in passing on the legacy of faith and the relationship with God to their children, even though many things were available to them. They had the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire, and they had, you know, the Ten Commandments, and they just all the rejection that they had, and really how there is still a legacy in that and the power of that. And of course, we know Deuteronomy is the write these things on your heart and speak about them when you lay down, when you sit up, and talk about them with your children. And so I want to remind those of you fathers and future fathers out there of that. Time marches on, but the legacy is something that will last for generations. So thanks to all of you for weighing in and sharing from your own stories. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, hello, everyone, for this week's culture segment, which is where I interview folks who are a lot of fun and also have something important to say, sometimes unlike myself. I am very privileged to have Byron Yon by phone. Byron, welcome.
Thank you for having me on. It's a privilege.
Absolutely. Well, you are an author. You're actually a bunch of things. We're going to be talking about one of your books today, one of your recent ones. But you are also a senior pastor. You pastor Community Bible Church in Nashville. And I know your book, you had a book, Well-Driven Nails, and lots of pastors seem to be on board with that. John MacArthur, who actually writes the foreword for the book we're going to talk about today, seems to be a supporter, although, you know, you did go to the Master's Seminary, so that might have something to do with it.
A little inbreeding there for sure, but I appreciate the sentiment.
The obligatory, forward. No, I'm sure he loves you, so that's good. You are a husband and a father. You have three kids, and we're going to talk today about, you know, we're excited about the theme for this week because, of course, we want to recognize Father's Day. So you have just written a book called What Every Man Wishes His Father Had Told Him. That's a pretty provocative title, which I'm sure all the guys in our audience, their ears just perked up a little bit. So, because we like, you know, they don't want me to tell them, Byron, let's just be honest. Sometimes I just like telling people what to do. It's one of my spiritual gifts. but I figured I needed to bring in some backup and let you do that this week. So I want to start out by saying you actually talk, you really break it down very well throughout the book, very well organized, and you kind of pepper it with a bunch of historic letters as well. I know you have one from Abraham Lincoln and Robert E. Lee. But I want to just start by you kind of telling us, because I'm sure you have lived this, you researched it. Why are we in the predicament we're in, basically, that has caused you to write this book, and why do guys specifically need to be addressed?
Well, my heart really is broken for the young adult, college-age male who kind of passes out of church and to never return. The church has this capacity to lose its men before they are men and married and fathers and businessmen. And I observed this in my own congregation, and it just frustrated me that the church had nothing for them starting at an early age. And so I just purposed to go after them because I think that men are essential to the church in the same way that women are essential to the church. And so as a result of this observation of just losing all these young men that I baptized as their pastor, as they grow and they just kind of disappear into the woodwork, I began looking around and just kind of observed the church doesn't have anything for them.
Yeah, and can you explain that a little bit? What do you mean by that, the church not having anything for them?
Well, there's this gap in our, if I could just use a term, education or the process of spiritual development, there's a gap in the church when it comes to young adult males, and meaning that when you reach this age where everything changes physically, emotionally, personally, and socially, I mean, adolescence and beyond is the biggest heads up of all time, but we seem to miss it, and we're not speaking directly into the needs that are associated with that period of life. So these young men go through our elementary ed programs and then junior high and then student ministries, and then they go into college and they're facing things that are completely unknown to them. And we have no real resource to address it because as churches, we're typically focused on the nuclear family, and there's this little demographic of people that get dropped. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, the reason they were departing the local church never to be heard from again was partly my fault. And then when my own son came along and grew to be about 13 years old, I woke up because I wanted my son to value the spiritual community of the church and for the church to value these future men. So I think there's nothing for them because we forget them.
Now, tell me what you talk a little bit on the front end of the book about biblical manhood, and what would you say? Can you define that for us? Because I know that there is a lot of talk around that. You know, we have the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. We've got lots of people talking about what it means to have a biblical understanding of masculinity and femininity. If you had to define to someone what is biblical manhood, what does that look like in the 21st century right now in the church? What is it?
Well, that's a long answer, unfortunately. I write about this subject more on a popular level and not really a polemical level. So the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, I think, gives sufficient exegetical answers as to some very critical passages of Scripture. What I'm more dealing with is what the popular church suburbianity, as I call it, is offering in terms of these definitions. And if you forced me to give you a definition, I would say that I think masculinity is self-restraining servanthood. And that's a definition that it's kind of been distilled as I've done the research for the book, because I'm looking for something simple. Mm-hmm. I think the church has made it a tad bit too complex. And I do take somewhat of a departure from the popular versions of masculinity that are out there right now. I'm just very grateful that it's made a comeback, masculinity has in the church, and that spirituality and masculinity aren't at odds, and they are compatible. As I like to say, I enjoy the smell of bacon coming from congregations now. It's refreshing that men can be men. Mm-hmm. But I think the pendulum has swung a little too far, and what I observe happening in the church by definition of masculinity is, I think, a little childish, a little overreactive, mm-hmm. which is typical of us as men, I think. And as I was researching the book, trying to find this definition of masculinity, what I realized is that the Bible doesn't offer one, because there are a lot of things about it that are supposed to be assumed and or are self-evident. But another thing that I realized is I read books on masculinity. I couldn't find any book that had any chapter or was primarily dedicated to Jesus as the definition of masculinity, which was kind of surprising to me and maybe indicative of the direction of the church in general. You know, as a man, if you go to a men's retreat somewhere and you sit down and you listen to the teaching, typically they focus on Moses or they focus on Joseph and they focus on Joshua, and they hold up these biblical examples of these men. And I think that can be tragic, because the example and the person that we're supposed to pursue is the person that they all point to. And so what happens is men are given these examples of these other men in biblical history that do certain things at certain times in the biblical record, but really weren't intended to be a pattern of masculinity, because all those men have the same need that every man has, which is Christ. And so men leave men's retreats really encouraged to do the very thing they shouldn't be doing, which is pull themselves up by their bootstraps, try harder, be more devoted, you know, words like courageous and victorious and loyal and devoted, and those kind of words are out there kind of on the wind in the popular Christian genre. And I'm not so sure that that's the direction we should be going. I love those virtues. I think they're powerful and useful, somewhat universal in nature. But if I looked at Jesus and I saw Jesus as an example of what real masculinity was, I would see something really different than what the church is offering. I mean, I think in some ways, maybe the scene in the upper room of Jesus washing the disciples' feet may be the most masculine thing I've ever seen him do besides die on a cross. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I mean by self-restraining, self-servitude.
Yeah, which is interesting because, like you said, that isn't something that's often painted in the church. And so I want to bring up something that a lot of our the guys in our sphere talk about, and that is their frustration with being pigeonholed as the Christian nice guy. You know, they often say, oh, you know, these women, these single women, they don't care about the guys who are just nice. They don't care about the ones who are, you know, out there serving quietly or whatever. They want the guys who are a little bit dangerous. And I'm sure there are women who've bought into the culture's definition of that. What's your encouragement then, in light of Jesus' example, for the guys who are just nice guys out there?
Well, I think, as you know, if I was talking to my son, I would say, I'm not sure that you want to marry a woman who would be given to such superficial definitions of masculinity. I think that's that overly romanticized vision is somewhat dangerous and deceptive. Mm-hmm. And my encouragement to them would be that biblical masculinity or Christian masculinity transcends all the stereotypes. And so you can have a guy with a wife beater on underneath the hood who knows how to bore out the cylinders of a V8, which I don't know how to do. Or you can have a guy in a plaid shirt with a pocket protector who can kill computer code. But the thing is that the gospel, the cross, and the themes of redemption which run through Christian masculinity transcend those things. And so I would encourage them not to measure themselves based on those stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And you're looking for a woman as a mate for life who is actually attracted to the same things that you are attracted to, which is a Savior who gave his life sacrificially, who chose weakness and obscurity. I mean, is that not at the heart of what we preach? To save us. And so I think many young men and women who approach marriage often think, you know, I'm going to find this person that's going to make me happy for the rest of my life. And that's not really a Christian perspective, because that's impossible. And secondly, we're supposed to be servants. And in order to love your spouse the way that you should, you have to look past your spouse to Christ and really love Christ more than you love your spouse to do that. So this is all part of a general deconstruction that I think has to take place. And so the man who's out there who is nice and normal and consistent and self-sacrificing and pays his bills on time and takes his garbage out on time and mows his yard when he should and pulls weeds in his bed and does all the normal stuff is my hero. I mean, that's the guy that the rest of us are setting our clocks by and wish we would be when we grow up. Mm-hmm. So I consider that quote-unquote normal, nice guy out there to be a symbol of what Christian masculinity is. Because at the end of the day, what a wife wants, among many other things, is consistency that she can hang her life on. Mm-hmm. And that consistency is developed by a deep devotion, which isn't given to the romantic swings of what it means to be a man.
Okay. And I think that actually plays into another question I want to ask you, especially given our audience. I think a lot of our guys out there will say, yeah, I kind of understand, you know, what it looks like as far as what my responsibilities are if and when I have a wife and family to protect, to provide. A lot of this is done in the context of self-sacrifice, what that looks like in marriage. What can you tell our guys, Byron, as far as what it looks like to be a man while they're still single? And then you talk a lot about accountability in the book. And I want to know, in light of that, while guys are still single, what do they need to be told right now and how do they need to be preparing?
Well, as to the first question of what does it mean to be a man while still single, that really comes down to devotion to Christ. You know, the same virtues that are resident in marriage that make marriage Christian are present prior to marriage. And in fact, the Christian virtues that we use in marriage to make it what it is are universal to the Christian life. Humility, self-sacrifice, consistency driven by the Spirit, a love for Jesus above every other thing are all universal kind of virtues that characterize and crown the Christian life. So it is essential to a man who's not yet married to understand that what he is now will be manifested within marriage. Marriage puts a magnifying glass on who we are, and it pulls those things out of us. And so right now really is the time to be developing the type of masculinity that can be sustained in marriage. So what does it look like? It looks like humility. It looks like a perspective on life which isn't drawn into sheer materialism, that understands that careers are means to an end and not the definition of who we are. It's a developing a proper perspective of sexuality, that sex, while blessed by God and designed by God and pleasurable and all those kind of things, are also not a means to identification and self-worth, that there's a place to it. So it is the training ground for marriage, because in a sense, what you are right now and what you are developing is what you will be in marriage, and which is why we're telling our young men constantly that now's the time to grow up. Now's the time to have these conversations that you've been putting off, that you needed to have. Now's the time to have accountability. And as to the second issue that you brought up there with respect to accountability, men are notoriously bad at friendships, particularly within the church. We like to do things on our own. We don't like to admit our weaknesses. We don't like to ask for help. We don't ask for directions, either on trips or in life. And friendships, Christian accountability within the church, are the things that push back on us, that when we offer trite resolutions to lifelong problems, friends, biblical ones that really love you, step in and confront your cover, mm-hmm. and they blow it. And we just as a group of men run from that. And so you need to be surrounding yourself and pursuing, quite frankly, men that are older than you that have been through those life experiences that can point out the defects in your own logic, and those men that are near you in age that are going through the same experiences. And one of the things that we've done to create this accountability is start a ministry called Trajectory, where men who are in their 50s and their 60s who've been through certain stages of life, sit across the table from men who are just about to embark on those seasons of life and create this conversation between the two of them that's not just there at that moment, but continues. And as the young man offers his perspective, it's corrected and it's checked by a man who's had failure in his life. So accountability at a young adult age is essential, and yet, to go back to one of our first points, the tragedy is that the church very often doesn't provide it in mm-hmm. candid, transparent, honest, and confessional ways, which is a sad outcome.
Well, and I think that's why I'm going to ask you to just expand upon that a bit, because you talk about trajectory and what your church has done. I think a lot of guys' frustration is that they don't really know where to start. They're not in a group, like you said, they don't have solid friendships where they can say, hey, guys, let's start this right now. Or I'll hear from a guy who says, I would love this, but I've been turned down by guys in my church to mentor me. Or I would love this, but all the guys that I hang out with are just like frat boy losers, and I don't know how to find any good friends. And I think there's just a lot of feeling of isolation among the guys that we hear from, as far as I want to do this, but I don't know how, and two, I can't seem to drum up any other interest in guys who are going to really do this with me. You gave the example of Trajectory, Byron. How have you done this in your life with the guys you know? I mean, did you figure out where you needed to be and then you just mapped out a way to get there? Or what did you have to do to step out of your comfort zone to get there?
Well, I think because of my life circumstance, having lost my biological father through his choices of departing our family, and then having lost my adoptive father to a tragic car accident, it's embedded in me that these relationships are important. And it was also, I guess, somehow admitting that I didn't know stuff was natural to me because of where I was and what I had been through and the need for people. And I fell in love with the wisdom of men who have come by the hard way of life, failure in various things, life experience. So, you know, it's in my DNA to seek it out, to ask and to pursue, and, you know, go up to men that I know and say, look, I'll mow your yard if you'll just let me spend 30 minutes of my day with you, just asking questions and you speaking into my life. So for me personally, coming out of my comfort zone, admitting my failures, putting myself out there was absolutely necessary. And this is part of building self-awareness. Most men, take marriage as an example, when they go into marriage, they have no idea of the issues that they're bringing into it, which is insanity. I mean, you have to have a level of self-awareness that you can warn your future spouse where you're going to struggle and where you could use her prayers and her observations. And so you have to think of it strategically to take advantage of it personally. That it's not just sitting down and having honest conversations and transparent conversations with people and unloading your garbage. It is about developing an accurate self-awareness through the objectivity of a loving brother who provides accountability. It's about sitting down and truly exposing your heart, your tendency towards indulgence, your laziness when it comes to matters of personal finance, your struggle with true definitions of sexuality, and having someone else push back on that, give you an awareness of yourself that you wouldn't have any other way, so that you can walk into a career or marriage or parenting and understand your deficiencies. And so I think it starts possibly with redefining what this fellowship and accountability is. I mean, anymore, fellowship is somewhat like a cliche in the church. It's lost its teeth a little bit. But what we want is someone to be honest with us, to buckle ourselves down, and even though we're about to hear things that we don't want to hear and things we've been denying forever and insecurities that we've been covering up the truth about ourselves, we need to hear that. And I think in order to get that and to benefit from that and to have access to it, you have to be in a congregation that exalts the gospel and exalts Christ and Him crucified, because that culture where the cross is exalted, the finished work of Christ is exalted, is an admission that we're all messed up. Mm-hmm. And if you can find an environment which views the cross as a confession about our true condition, then the plastic is pulled off of us.
Yeah, that's good.
So to the young men out there that are kind of in the popular church scene, you know, 10 principles in a cloud of dust, but there doesn't seem to be an honest confession about the human condition, you need to get to a place where the preacher is primitive and raw in his description about the human's need for grace. Because when you find that preached consistently, you will find an opportunity to unload your burden to people who share the same burden.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good. I'm actually reading with my church community right now the book Total Church, and what you said reminds me of that. One of the things they talk about there is really allowing your church community to be part of the bigger decisions of your life, and that's so counter-cultural, especially counter-American, in the sense of we want to do our own thing, we want to have responsibility for our free time, for our finances, we want it to just be ours. And they're really asking and challenging people to allow those in authority over you, as well as your church community, to get into your business and make this happen. I think that's a great illustrative point of that. And I think once a guy can do that, he can really start stepping into areas of leadership.
Isn't it true, too, that we nearly have to deconstruct the young adults' perspective of church, like the church is, you know, really there for them, and that is collateral, no doubt, but that it's bigger than that. It's a family. It's where people are not going to allow you to get away with the version of yourself you've been putting forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Young men need that desperately.
Exactly. Well, the book is What Every Man Wishes His Father Had Told Him. Again, we've been talking with Byron Yon. We will link to the book so you can go ahead and check it out on our blog. And Byron, thanks so much. There is so much more in here. So I really would recommend, again, What Every Man Wishes His Father Had Told Him. Stuff we didn't even get to talk about is passivity, the influence of porn, talking about really taking on life responsibilities. There's a chapter, if you lower the standards, you can reach them every time. So just a lot of great things. I would encourage you guys to read the book and then grab some of your buddies and have them read it as well and use it as a springboard for discussion. Byron, thank you so much for being part of the Boundless Show and for joining us today. Good thoughts here, and we really appreciate your input.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a privilege.
Darkness by
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Glenn Lutyens with me. Glenn, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. Good to be with you.
Great to have you here. A good question today from a guy, so we're going to need a guy's perspective on this, and Glenn is also one of our counselors here, and so he'll be able to provide perspective, I'm sure, from a number of different angles. Our listener says, I'm 20 years old, and I need some guidance in understanding biblical manhood. The Lord has helped me a lot in becoming a better leader. He's been faithful in helping me fulfill my role as a president of a student organization at my college, a leader of a small group, and as a serving member of the U.S. Army. However, as of this moment, I'm still terribly quiet, introverted, sensitive, and kind of a nerdy person who smiles a lot. At times, I try to become more of an extroverted jock, but that just doesn't feel right. Are my nice guy qualities a hindrance toward my biblical manhood, or can God possibly have a purpose for them?
Well, let me just first say I'm thankful that you have a desire to understand what biblical manhood is. You have a desire to grow in that, and that's a great quality to have, a great pursuit to be involved in. And there are a lot of avenues that you have been involved in that I think make use of some of your gifts and skills. I would say there are two areas that are important in pursuing biblical manhood. One is maybe becoming more assertive. Because it sounds like there may be elements of your personality which you're more inclined to kind of sit back, be a little bit more laid back. And so growing in assertiveness might be an important element. And there are some of us that just our personalities, we're not just by nature particularly assertive, and so it's an area that we need to grow in. There's an individual, his name is Paul Coughlin, and he wasn't a particularly assertive guy. He wrote a book called No More Christian Nice Guy. And that book really speaks to the issue of how to develop, how to become more assertive. And I think assertiveness is a very close tie-in to courage. Courage is important for us to have. I don't think it's a matter of having to change your personality. I don't think it's a matter of having to become someone you're not. But it's really allowing God's Spirit to kind of infuse in you those strengths, the ability to be assertive, the ability to be courageous in your everyday life and in the leadership capacity that you have. So those are two elements that I think would be important. There's a book written by Steve Farrar, and the title of the book is called Battle Ready, Joshua and Caleb. And it's really on that whole aspect of how to be a biblical man, leadership skills and capacity. So those might be a couple of resources that you might find helpful.
Yeah, I like what you said, Glenn, about the personality element to this, in the sense that there's not a certain look to courage or to assertiveness or to manhood in that sense. There are a lot of quiet guys out there by personality who are great leaders and who do great things in the church and who lead their families well. And I think that's important for our listener to remember as well. Do you think there's any, I mean, how can guys kind of battle that trend or the pressure that they feel to be some kind of stereotypical man who's always in cage matches, or if he's not out hunting, or if he's not, you know, whatever, doing the stereotypical things? Right. What are some ways that he can kind of be strong in this kind of culture without having to be someone he's not?
Well, I think of two individuals in the New Testament, Jesus and John the Baptist. One was a guy who had the coat of camel hair, and he was out there in the wilderness, and probably, well, he did eat locusts and honey. Jesus was also a leader. He was assertive, but he was had a different personality. And so if we can see that even within the context of different personalities, God can use that element, I think that might help an individual when there's that temptation to just try to be someone who other people are pushing us towards as far as models, when, you know, every individual has their own ability. Plus, I think it's important to realize that there are leaders, and we also need followers. There may be times that in your personality and your temperament, God's called you to follow as well as lead. And so we need to see that both of those have value.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, if all else fails, you just say, hey, I'm just being like Jesus, okay?
That's right.
See what people say, see how they respond to that. So, well, great thoughts, Glenn. Thank you so much. That is it for this week's show, everyone. Again, we encourage you to write to us at editor@boundless.org with your question or your comments about the show. We want to hear feedback from you because that's what helps us shape future shows. So make sure that you are doing that as well as catching up on past shows and passing them along to your friends. Post them on your Facebook page, tweet them, and that helps us spread the word. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.